Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So this morning we'll have a special Srimad Bhagavatam class. Actually not Srimad Bhagavatam at all, but topics of Bhagavatam. And we'll be reading from Bhagavad Gita to start. As this class is dedicated to Stacy Lavender and reflecting on the philosophical meaning of her untimely and unfortunate departure. So what I'd like to do is read some section from the Bhagavad Gita, verses 12 through 30 in the second chapter, page 76 in my edition here. And we'll just read the Sanskrit and English for these verses as a meditation. One of the purports, and then I'd like everyone to think about questions they may have, how this affects your faith in God and other realizations that you have on this occasion. Okay? And again, this class is not dedicated so much to Stacy's particular memory. That will be on Sunday. But rather, now we want to examine how philosophically, this affects us. We have faith in God, and yet something terrible happens. How do we reconcile these conflicting emotions and confusing events in our lives? So, starting on text 12, chapter 30. Everyone there? We need more books. Anyone need another book? Okay. 212. Let's chant the Sanskrit together, shall we? Na tvevaham jatu nasam, na tvam nemi janadhipah, na chaiva na bhavishyama, sarve vayamata param. Never was there a time when I did not exist, nor you, nor all these kings, nor in the future shall any of us cease to be. 13. Dehi nosmin yata dehe, tomaram jovanam jara, tata dehantara praptir, hirastatra namuhyati. As the embodied soul continuously passes in this body, from boyhood to youth to old age, the soul similarly passes into another body at death. A sober person is not bewildered by such a change. Matra sparshastu konteya sitoshna sukha dukhada agama payino nityash tamstitikshasva bharata. So, son of Kunti, the non-permanent appearance of happiness and distress and their disappearance in due course are like the appearance and disappearance of winter and summer seasons. They arise from sense perception, O Sayana of Bharata, and one must learn to tolerate them without being disturbed. Yam hina vyatiyantiyete purusham purusharshabha samadukha sukham dhiram somritat vayakalpate. O best among men, Arjuna, the person who is not disturbed by happiness and distress and is steady in both is certainly eligible for liberation. Nasato vidyate bhavo, na bhavo vidyate sataha, ubayor api drishtontas, tvanyayas tatpadarshibi. Those who are seers of the truth have concluded that of the non-existent, the material body, there is no endurance, and of the eternal, the soul, there is no change. This they have concluded by studying the nature of both. Avinasi tu tadvidhi yena sarvam idam tatam vinasham avinasyasya na kaschit kartum arhati. That which pervades the entire body you should know to be indestructible. No one is able to destroy the imperishable soul. Antavanta ime deha nitya shokta saririna anasino pama yeshya tamasvad yudhasva bharata. the material body of the indestructible, immeasurable, and eternal living entity is sure to come to an end. Therefore, fight, O descendant of Bharata. Ya enam veti hantaram yaschainam manyate hatam ubhau tau na vijanito nayam hansi nahanyate. Neither he who thinks the living entity the slayer, nor he who thinks it slain is in knowledge, for the self slays not, nor is it slain. Najayate mriyate va kadachin nayam bhutva bhavita va nabhuya ajo nitya shashvatoyam parano nahanyate hanyamani sharire. For the soul there is neither birth nor death at any time. He has not come into being, does not come into being, and will not come into being. He is unborn, eternal, ever-existing, and primeval. He is not slain. 21. Vedavinasinam nityam yaenam ajam avyayam katam sa purusha partha kam guru jayati hantikam. O Partha, how can a person who knows his soul is indestructible, eternal, and unborn, and immutable, kill anyone or cause anyone to kill? Vasangsi jirnani yata vihaya navani grinati naro parani tata sharirani vihaya jirnani anani samyati navani dehi. As a person puts on new garments, giving up old ones, the soul similarly accepts new material bodies, giving up the old and useless ones. Nainam chindanti shashani, nainam dahati pavakaha, na chainam kledayantyapo, na shoshayati marutaha. The soul can never be cut to pieces by any weapon, nor burned by fire, nor moistened by water, nor withered by the wind. Achedyoyam adhayoyam akledyo shoshya evacha nityaksarvagata stanur achaloyam sanatanaham. This individual soul is unbreakable and insoluble, and can neither be burned nor dried. He is everlasting, present everywhere, unchangeable, immovable, and eternally the same. Avyaktoyam achintyoyam avikaryoyam uchyate tasmadevam vaditainam nanu sochitum arhasi. It is said that the soul is invisible, inconceivable, and immutable. Knowing this, you should not grieve for the body. Atachainam nityajatam nityam vamanyase mritam tatapi tvam mahabaho nainam shochitum arhasi. If, however, you think that the soul or the symptoms of life will always be born and die forever, you still have no reason to lament, O mighty arm. Jatasya hi dhruvo mrityur dhruvam janma mritasya cha tadsmada pariharyarte natvam shochitum arhasi. One who has taken his birth is sure to die, and after death, one is sure to take birth again. Therefore, in the unavoidable discharge of your duty, you should not lament. Avyaktadini bhutani vyakta madhyani bharata avyakta nidhanantyeva tatradka paridevana. All created beings are unmanifested in their beginning, manifest in their interim state, and unmanifested again when annihilated. So what need is there for lamentation? Ascharyavad pasyati kaschit enam ascharyavad vadati tatai vachanya ascharyavad chainam anyak shrinoti shrutvapyenam veda nachaiva kaschit. Some look on the soul as amazing, some describe him as amazing, and some hear of him as amazing, while others, even after hearing about him, cannot understand him at all. Dehi nityam avadyoyam Dehi sarvasya bharata, tasmat sarvani bhutani, na tvam shochitum arhasi. O descendant of Bharata, he who dwells in the body can never be slain. Therefore, you need not grieve for any living being. Well, please turn back to text 18. Page 84, we'll read the translation and purport. The material body of the indestructible, immeasurable, and eternal living entity is sure to come to an end. Therefore, fight, O descendant of Bharata. Srila Prabhupada's purport. The material body is perishable by nature. It may perish immediately, or it may do so after 100 years. It is a question of time only. There is no chance of maintaining it indefinitely. But the spirit soul is so minute that it cannot even be seen by an enemy, to say nothing of being killed. As mentioned in the previous verse, it is so small that no one can have any idea how to measure its dimension. So from both viewpoints, there is no cause of lamentation, because the living entity, as he is, cannot be killed, nor can the material body be saved for any length of time or permanently protected. The minute particle of the spirit, of the whole spirit, acquires this material body according to his work, and therefore observance of religious principles should be utilized. In the Vedanta Sutras, the living entity is qualified as light because he is part and parcel of the supreme light. As sunlight maintains the entire universe, so the light of the soul maintains this material body. As soon as the spirit soul is out of this material body, the body begins to decompose. Therefore, it is the spirit soul which maintains the body. The body itself is unimportant. Arjuna was advised to fight and not sacrifice the cause of religion for material bodily considerations. I'd like to welcome, first of all, His Grace Krishna Kripa Prabhu. Very nice to have you with us. Thank you for being here. I'd also like to welcome Sam, Jude, and Dwayne. Thank you for joining us this morning. So we have this great unexpected tragedy upon us. And there's something called Smarshana Vairagya in the Shastras. Smarshana Vairagya means the renunciation of the burning ghat. In India, when there's a death, they do something which we're not legally allowed to do in America. And it actually is a violation of our civil rights, but that is another issue. The procedure in India when a person dies is that, at least in many communities, the body is taken on some procession. Everybody sees the dead body. With Stacy, it was very difficult to even be allowed to go in and see her when she was on life support. Very few could go in. And in a more enlightened culture, everyone sees. Everyone sees what is the dead body. And the body is wrapped in a chadar, Harinam chadar, and decorated very nicely with sacred ornaments. Again, in the West, they make some effort to make the body look very natural. And they put cosmetics, and this is the cliche at the funeral. Everybody says, oh, doesn't he look natural? You know, he looks so nice. They make every effort to dress up the body. In Sanskrit, this is called manjanam lokaranjanam, right? Is that the phrase? It's decorations for the dead body. But in the Vedic culture, we're just anointing the body as a vehicle whose time has now expired and has no more use in this world. So after the public procession, the body is taken to the crematorium, which is on the banks of a sacred river. And there the body is burned. The elder son or nearest relative will light the fire. And in the presence of everyone, the body simply disappears. And this is a very dramatic experience. Has anyone ever experienced this? Pardon me? Many times. Yes. So what is the emotional reaction when you see the body of someone you know being burned?
Death will be used. first time in my childhood. I was just 10, 11 years and my grandfather died. And first I couldn't comprehend what's going on. Then I start thinking that what's happening. Then I wonder that, oh, he will never come back now. Then this thought sank into me and I realized that death is such a painful thing. And I began asking questions, what's happening after death? And fortunately that led me to Bhagavad Gita one day.
So this is the immediate natural emotional reaction that anyone will have. They realize that this is permanent. This person is not coming back. So let's consider for a moment the illusion that we operate under. You know, we read in the Sri Ishopanishad about the four defects of the living entity. Imperfect senses, a tendency to make mistakes, a tendency to be illusion, or be illusion and make mistakes, one way or the other. And in spite of all these defects, cheating, a propensity to present oneself as having perfect knowledge. So this is cheating. So the illusion of material life is this idea that we have entitlement to a certain number of years or a certain group of friends or a certain group of family members. And, you know, everybody lives to be 80 or 90, so I'm going to live to be 80 or 90. That's my entitlement. It's my right. And I therefore have the further right to make all sorts of plans of what I'm going to do between now and then. And if these rights, this so-called entitlement, is violated, we become very indignant. Wait a minute, something is wrong. Now that's a natural emotion. That's a natural phenomenon. It's something perhaps that we're experiencing now in regard to Stacy. This just seems so wrong. It seems so inappropriate. In the pastimes of Lord Krishna in Dwarka, while King Ugrasen was on the throne, a Brahmin had this remarkable tragedy going on in his life. His wife gave birth to a child, and all of a sudden the child died. So the Brahmin complained to the king, because it was the king's responsibility not to prevent death, but to be so pious and so godly that nothing untoward would happen in the kingdom. And if something inappropriate happened, it was therefore considered the king's fault. Somehow this king was not performing his duty properly. So the Brahmin complained to Ugrasen. And Ugrasen tried, but again it happened. The second child died, and a third, and a fourth. And at this point, the Brahmin was totally disgusted with Ugrasen. Then I believe it was the seventh child, sixth child. Anyway, in many times this happened. Then Arjuna heard about it, and he said, I will personally protect and make sure nothing happens to this child. But in spite of all of Arjuna's efforts, he was there at the moment of birth. He was guarding with his bow and arrow. The child simply vanished. So Arjuna had pledged that if he did not protect this child, he would commit suicide. So he began searching all over the universe. He couldn't find it. But Krishna told him, no, you should not lament. I will help you. And together they went to the abode of Mahavishnu. Okay, so this was the pastime. And Mahavishnu said, yes, I have taken all these children just because I wanted to see you too, Nara and Narayan. So there was some purpose was there that was inscrutable to everyone, even Arjuna. So we should understand that God acts for purposes which are higher than our own. And that we cannot understand them. It doesn't. Just as we have no right to so many years of life or so many expectations that we entertain, similarly, we have no prerogative to understand what God is doing in some particular situation. He doesn't owe us an explanation. You know? He acts, and we are left here trying to figure out what happened, you know, or what is it all about. And sometimes it takes decades before that even becomes somewhat clear why Krishna has planned this. And sometimes we never know. So this spirit soul, who we knew as Stacy Lavender, was just, this is like one tiny slice of this vast eternal existence of this particular spirit soul. When King Chitraketu desired a son, he had everything, big king, but he had no son. And so he was miserable. So he asked the sage, can you help me get a son? The sage said, I can do it, but this son will bring you happiness and distress. He said, that's all right, go ahead. I'll take it. He was thinking, well, maybe when he's a teenager, you know, he'll pierce his tongue or something. So instead what happened was the wife who, he had many wives, and the wife who gave birth to this child became his favorite, and all the other wives became very jealous to the point where they said, we've got to get rid of this kid, and they poisoned the child. So after this event, everyone was plunged in lamentation. And the sage returned and said, I mentioned this would happen. This son would bring you joy and distress. And he said, if you want, I can bring this child back to life. So he did this in front of the king and his wife. And the child stood up in the crib and said, with a wisdom far beyond his years, who are you? And his parents said, don't you recognize us? I'm your loving mother. I'm your loving father. Don't you recognize us? And the child said, I'm sorry, which parents are you? I've had so many parents, I can't exactly remember which ones you were. So by the grace of the sage, this living entity was given its memory about so many lifetimes. The first verse we read in this section, many lives, rather, you and I have been through. I can remember them, but you cannot. So Stacy has been through so many lifetimes, and now she's been in this one lifetime. And we have this, all these expectations that, yes, we know Stacy, we have some relationship with Stacy, we're going to know Stacy, she'll be around in the orbit of our lives. And now, whoop, all of a sudden, she's gone on to another body. And God knows why that happened to Stacy. But neither it's anyone's fault, nor is it anyone's right to understand. It's just the inscrutable will of God. And why Krishna does this, you know, we may never understand. But if we take something from this, good from this experience, it's this smarshana vairagya. When you see the body burned, then there's a sense of understanding of the ephemeral, temporary nature of life. And so everyone goes home from the burning ghat like Nanda Kumar, very sober. What is going on? But in most cases, they're not as intelligent as Nanda Kumar. And he said, okay, I've got to understand what this is about. In most cases, the renunciation, the sobriety lasts for a day or a week or a month, and then it's business as usual. So that's why in India they have these all the time. This is why it's a good thing, you know, to keep everyone aware of the real values of life. Prabhupada said that a philosopher is one who keeps death in his front. So this is not the impersonalist approach to emotion. We all have emotion about Stacy's death. The impersonalists want to just squash it, get rid of it. They don't want it around. And they think that if there's emotion in the heart, that's for the neophytes. So let me meditate on Brahman. Na sochati, na kanchati, na, no lamenting, no hankering. But that is not our philosophy at all. We shed many tears over the departure of a beloved Vaishnava. You know, we naturally feel sad in separation. And we respond to it by reflecting more deeply on our own temporary existence in this body and all the temporary relationships that we think we're entitled to. So if a person is not taking anything for granted, that person is enlightened in spiritual life. Prabhupada said material life means shock after shock. You know, one disaster followed by the next one, and all of them unexpected. You know, we sign up for Krishna consciousness, we say, okay, there's going to be tests, and I can pass the test. And then Krishna gives us this damn test, which was not what we signed up for. And we say, wait a minute, not that one. I was willing to take the other one. Yeah? But they're always, that's the meaning of test, actually. Something that we were not expecting, something that we were that we were not prepared for, right? In terms of Krishna consciousness, these are the tests. And so, those are some of my thoughts on Stacy's departure. It can be taken as a very sobering and enlightening experience, and one that can make a permanent change in our lives and our consciousness. In my opinion, that's the best way we can honor and remember Stacy, as a turning point in our own spiritual lives. That here is, this was an occasion where I realized something that has now stayed with me and that I will never forget. So, who else would like to share some thoughts on this occasion?
Hare Krishna, this book here, I've read a lot in dealing with people that have left their body, and this is called Dealing with Death. It's by Prabhu Vishnu Das, and it was he thanks His Holiness Bhakti Chaitanya Swami, who has been instrumental, and also Bhakti Churu Swami, in compiling this book about how to deal with death and the actual rites and mantras and things that one should do when one's leaving their body. But I just thought if I could read something out of this that would encourage everybody in what has happened and that will happen to all of us at some point in our life. It'll only take a moment to read this, and it's called, part one is called Illusion. And then I'll go in and just say a few words about the importance of devotional service and how it really protects us all when facing death, and then the auspiciousness that has come from Stacy's passing as well. So the first part, it says, as we step into the 21st millennium, we can look back and query the phenomenal changes of the 20th century. Einstein's ideas encapsulated modern man into a world of applied physics. Scientists were able to manipulate subatomic particles and create atom bombs and silicone chips. Biotechnology ushered in a new dimension when James Watson and Francis Crick discovered the self-replicating structure of DNA. Their successes in manipulating DNA has led to the production of everything from customized drugs to animal clones. Human clones are no more a pipe dream. However, mankind's so-called successes have simultaneously spawned local and international rivalries, bitterness, hatred, ethnic cleansing, wars, disease, and social degradation. Facilities for intense sense gratification is unleashed an extensive decline in spiritual and moral values. The obvious result is that the members of modern human society are rapidly forgetting their eternal relationship with God. Very few people are spiritually awake to understand the importance of human life. We are inclined to wholly identify ourselves with our gross material bodies and are not aware that the body and the self are different. Bewildered by the illusory energy, we consider ourselves a permanent part of the material creation. Very few people can really understand that we are spiritual beings and that by nature we are full of happiness. This inherent trait for happiness has transformed into a tenacious desire for material sense enjoyment and has doused our sense of responsibility. In a bid to fully satisfy the senses, we have become entrapped by the stringent laws of material nature. Most of us have no inclination to acquire about the self beyond the body and the mind. Hence we while away our precious time with no desire to go back to Godhead. In the inner term, things change from one stage to another by the unfailing influence of time. The darkness of death is inevitable and pampers no person. Death devours living entities at every moment, snatching them without hesitation. You and I may be aware of this, but such thoughts are cast to the distant recesses of the mind. We prefer to generate a buffer by encircling ourselves with friends and family. We seek bodily comforts and strive for an increase in personal wealth. Perhaps these would counteract the invasive material nature, inducing a release from the certainty of death, old age, and disease. All this is nothing but illusion. The mighty empires of history have flickered and disappeared. Nothing can save one from the onslaught of time. Nothing material is permanent. Our foolishness is truly amazing. We think that we are independent, that we can do whatever we like, that we will not meet death in the near future. Despite the presence of our loved ones, we cannot be protected from misery, disease, and death. No one can help. Our only shelter is the Lord. He guarantees our protection. Lord Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita 9:31, O son of Kunti, declare it boldly that my devotee never perishes. So I just wanted to read this part about devotional service. It says, by always engaging devotional service for the pleasure of the Supreme Lord, one's ancestors who might have been in difficulty are automatically relieved. Simply by performing devotional service, one can deliver hundreds and thousands of forefathers from all kinds of miseries. Vaishnavas have taken a vow to worship Lord Krishna every day. Any Vaishnava who worships Lord Krishna does not have to worry about the future. The Lord will ensure a proper situation for his devotees. By eating the remnants of food offered to Krishna, one is delivered from all kinds of sinful actions. Always remember that by taking the prasad of the Lord, one will not become a ghost or anything lower than a human being. So he just goes on to explain like the things that should be done and to remember to do. And he says for us that we should continue with our bhakti and our daily worship. We should always have aarti and chant our rounds of Hare Krishna Maha Mantra and offer bhoga to the Lord. And it says, every devotee knows the importance on this day to distribute prasadam in transcendental literature. And I just wanted to say that when I went up and talked with the Stacy's family, I had told them that Stacy had asked me one thing. I said I wanted to give her something when she leaves for New Mexico. And she had said one thing that she really would like me to do is make some Tulsi necklaces for her. So I had made these two, and I hadn't given them to her yet because I had made them over spring break when I had a little time. And so I gave them to the mom and the sister and the cousin. And the family, when I was talking to them, I had brought extra in case it was possible, but they all really appreciated Tulsi. And Sarah, her roommate, said, well, you know, Sarah always wore these Tulsi beads, and she pulls on hers and say, I've got mine on too. And I told them I would give them one if they would like, and they said, oh yes, for sure. And I said, you know, when you see somebody do somebody in sports or something, the family will wear team Stacy shirts. I said, we'll wear team Stacy bracelets. And so everybody of the friends and families that wanted one, Sarah brought me around to them, and I was able to put Tulsi on them. And it was just show how, with one person being a devotee in the family, how they benedict the whole family and friends. And I had told them that Stacy understood the philosophy on from our spiritual master, A.C. Bhaktivedanta, and that he had written these literatures, and there was this one book called Beyond Birth and Death. I said, I spoke a lot with Stacy and served next to her, and I told him all of the good things that Stacy had done for my husband and myself, and I just wanted to give them a memory of Stacy, and if I could give them a book. And they all said, oh yes, please, we would love one. And I gave everyone that was there that wanted one a book of Beyond Birth and Death. So it was a real auspicious occasion, even after, you know, having to go through this tragedy when seeing the family suffer and everything, that so many people were benedicted by that, what had happened. And in this book, it also talks about rites that one should go through. And Stacy was able to have the sacred, Radha Kund on her head. And it was, I talked with the family, and the mother said that when the body is cremated, she's going to give some ashes to me so that I can put them in the Yamuna when she passes on. So it's a real auspicious thing that has happened for Stacy.
So he wouldn't have to bend over to tie his lace. So nice. Thank you. Who else would like to say something?
I'd just like to say I was at the kirtan yesterday, and me and this guy Joshua were talking about appreciating life after we've lost somebody who we really loved or was really close with, or and he was saying how people celebrate their birthday. My birthday was on the 13th, and he was saying we should celebrate every day that we're alive. Like, we should have midnight celebration. Like, we made it through the day, you know, because you never know what day is going to be your day. And we're just talking about appreciating every day as if it was your last. And, you know, I've heard that a lot of times throughout my life, but I never really thought about it until now. And I think it's a good idea. So we should all try to appreciate everyone around us who's alive and smiling, and we can talk to them and, you know, be around them. So anyway, I guess that's all I got to say.
Could I suggest we put back that midnight celebration to 4 a.m. or 5 a.m.?
I was thinking about like karma, and because I've read all, like, it always happens, like, young people that are always, like, really nice and stuff, like, die young, you know, like, it happens all the time, like, reading all the time in the news, like, all these, like girls that used to, like, missionaries or whatever, or that were, like, really pious, like, they pass away really early in life. And so I was wondering if that is, like karmically, like, do they come to this world just to do, like, the, like, that little bit of work that needed to be done, and then, like, is it over? Like, is that done? That's why, they leave early, and that's, like, it? That's all they needed to do down here or something? I don't know.
That is certainly one way to look at it. Krishna says that the intricacies of karma cannot be understood by anyone. So we could only speculate. That is a cliche, the good die young, right? I know devotees who've lost infants and have had this this kind of comfort, taking comfort in that. This living entity had to just take birth and then finish a little bit of karma and then be liberated because they had nothing but Krishna consciousness in their life, their brief life. So the people who are left behind always suffer. So we're all lamenting now we don't have Stacy's company. But what about Stacy? Is she better off wherever she is now than she was in Gainesville? What do you think? Yes, she's done so much Krishna conscious activity and had so much. Undoubtedly, she's gotten a better situation, more free of material desires, more conducive for devotional service. There's no doubt. So whatever happens to a devotee, Stephanie, is not karma. That's the thing. When we start chanting Hare Krishna, the karma's done. You know, every time we say, you just say Krishna, and all the sins you could have possibly committed have been obliterated. Problem is, we commit more, so we have to keep chanting. So the activities and the events in the life of a devotee are directly controlled by Krishna. For the non-devotee, they're indirectly controlled through the agency of the material energy. So we should know that Krishna plucked Stacy out of this situation for some reason. Any other comments on that? Yes, Nima.
In material life, we get tests in Krishna consciousness, and we feel like as if it is a shock or unfortunate situation. So, how should we understand what's what to learn in this situation, or test means what? I mean, what is it for?
One thing to understand is that, just like Kalakanta Prabhu was saying, that Krishna is controlling everything. That not even a, Prabhupada describes it, not even a blade of grass moves without the will of the Lord. And also that Krishna is the ever well wishing best friend of every living entity, 24 hours a day. So whatever happens to the living entity, no matter what it is, Krishna is behind it. Even if there's some sort of so-called reversal, ultimately we can understand that because Krishna loves that living entity unconditionally, he's making a specific arrangement for that person to advance further, no matter what it is. So that's something to keep in mind, that there's nothing to really lament for, that Krishna is looking out for everyone very nicely. And that even though from our perspective, it may appear to be something very, very bad, like Prabhu was saying, ultimately Krishna knows what's best for the living entity, and he's making specifically that arrangement just so the living entity can become free from material life and go back to Godhead. And that's absolutely what happened with Stacy, no question about it. Not just Stacy, but for every living entity.
In today's discussion, it was mentioned that if we are devotees, then the family members are also benefited. Then I'm wondering, what about their devotional service? They are not doing any devotional service, then how can they get benefited just by being connected to a devotee? And if that is the case, then why don't Krishna benefit everybody? Because if he is giving for free for them, then why not everybody? And why this procedure so much?
I heard a conversation, a devotee was talking to Prabhupada, and he was mentioning how the family members of devotees attain liberation. And he asked Prabhupada what kind of liberation that was. And Prabhupada says they become devotees. That's real liberation. So they become devotees.
Okay. And anyone, devotional service is so auspicious. Anyone who comes in touch. So think of all the thousands of people that Stacy served prasadam to. All of these people have had their lives transformed forever. And all of that credit Stacy has accumulated, whatever else may have been there in her life, she has just done so much service over and over again. So her family has all benefited, even before they got Tulsi beads. And that was the prayer of Prahlad Maharaj, right? Krishna Sharanam, can you describe that a little bit? When Prahlad Maharaj asked Lord Nrisimhadev for a benediction. When Lord Nrisimhadev offered a benediction. Remember that excerpt? Who remembers that?
I don't remember the verses, but I think first Prahlad Maharaj asked for benediction for his father, please, he's my father, like, take. I don't want anything. Yeah, I don't want anything myself. And he started with this one. Was that? Not a merchant. I don't remember the specific details, but I remember that he wanted the benediction for his father that he gets devotional service, that he gets liberated, something like that.
Concern for him. I said it. And then he said, your family, was it 14 generations? Are all liberated automatically. Ask for something else. Vasudev Dutta also. That's it? Yes. So, yes. Please go ahead and explain.
Both Prahlad Maharaj and Vasudev. What was the parent? What was the benediction to both Prahlad Maharaj and
Vasudev? They asked so that Vasudev Dutta especially, he asked that let others sin come to me and they get delivered. And Lord Chaitanya told, just because of your desire, everyone is delivered.
So they all have become devotees. That's all. They're not very much. Well, then that's what is my question.
Ah.
To them, devotees, then it's like, okay, we are becoming devotees and we're undergoing the process of liberation and then getting devotees. So, do they directly do it or do they also
undergo the process? According to Gopal's the lecture that Prabhupada said, right? Liberation means being a devotee, real liberation.
Because of their association with her, that they would advance further in devotional service. I think that's what it means.
Okay, other comments? Jude.
Good morning, everyone. Hare Krishna. Me and Stacy were very close. I'm not sure how many people knew that. And as we began associating, I naturally began contemplating what she meant to me, what she would mean to me in the future. And, you know, as I began contemplating that, you know, led to a lot of speculation about the future of this life and our bodies for both of us. So, but as I process the situation and I think back about it, I think about how the Lord doesn't owe any of us an explanation, but how you know, Krishna is very merciful, and how I've seen him give peace to his to her family members, to me, and to friends that normally wouldn't be able to handle this. And I see how people that should be clinically insane are having a lot of peace in their lives. So I thank Krishna for that. And also I think about Stacy, and like I never really saw her sin. I never really saw her break a regulative principle, and she was completely surrounded by it. She never embraced intoxication. You know, she never desired to be loved illicitly. That wasn't her goal. Being in a female body and just being around people. And of course, she's been a vegetarian far before she came and accepted Krishna consciousness. And the only time she would gamble is when she would call out of state cars and punch people. That was a bit of a gamble, but just a inappropriate joke perhaps. But I just wanted to say that about Stacy. So thinking about that, I prayed in the room for her when there were hundreds of you all here. And the security guard was trying to kick us out of the entire floor. And as I went in to pray, Vaikuntha Prabhu had been wheeled into the room, and he had just gotten there. And people had been waiting for days and haven't seen her. And it was very auspicious that, you know, Vaikuntha Prabhu, an elder devotee, with all due respect, perhaps he had been practicing Krishna consciousness longer than anyone here have. I don't know when he joined, but he was rolled into the room immediately, and it was very auspicious. So I just wanted to say that. Thank you.
I guess this is addressing before about how the family and everybody benefits from her spirituality, from her devotion. And to me it seems like I've done a lot of searching to see like benefit in this, and it seems a really subtle process. I really didn't know. I knew Stace, but I did not know too much of her family, or didn't personally associate with much of her family or friends, but I did get to talk to them a lot in this time. And they had a great deal of love and care for Stacy, for very specific attributes that she possessed personally, like aspects of her personality, aspects that directly related to her service devotionally to spirituality and to others, like her care and compassion and her love for life and her love for others. And I talked to them a lot about and heard them talk to others about these aspects that they appreciated so much, all these people that she had touched with these aspects of her personality, which went directly into her devotional service, appreciated so much that they naturally rubbed off on them. They naturally, just out of attraction to how beautiful this was to see and how rare this was to see in another person, that they naturally adopted it in themselves. So perhaps not in the form of this philosophy, but it seems like she did make a little bit of a devotee out of everybody. She passed on the traits that made her so pleasant to be around, such a devoted individual. She passed those on to the people that she touched and knew, that knew her well, when they, I guess, searched themselves to find out why they cared about her so much, why they liked her so much, all those traits that she embodied. So maybe it's a subtle process to how the spirituality and the devotion of one person seems to rub off on everybody, especially the family, since they're the closest, the friends, since they're the closest. Not given away to everyone, maybe the people that didn't know her so well, but definitely given freely to those who did.
I spoke to Stacy's sister and her husband, and she said, she was saying that that she never heard from Stacy. Every time Stacy called them, she talked about Krishna much. It's always Krishna something. So they were constantly, for 3.5 years, they were just getting this barrage. So, thank you. Who else would like to say something? Holly?
I was just wondering, like throughout the week, I've heard like different conversations and some of them on sort of this idea of like speculating why Krishna would have taken Stacy at this point. And I was just wondering how, if you thought that's a good thing to do, or is it something that we should avoid altogether? When I was hearing him, I felt like even at one point I requested somebody to stop the conversation because I felt like I felt like it was too much speculation and it was too narrow of a vision, you know.
Right, we can't understand why it happened. So it is speculation to say, well, because of this reason or that reason, Krishna's taken her away. When people are grieving, they do all kinds of things to try to deal with the pain, and that can be one of them. To try to rationalize or validate, and in some cases, to protect their faith. You know? So if somebody needs to do that, I would be a little compassionate with them and just let it go. Because people are grasping at straws in times of crisis like that. This rabbi, the famous rabbi, wrote a book, When Bad Things Happen to Good People. And his conclusion was, I mean, his life was very brutally sad. I think he had lost his child to some terrible childhood disease or something like that. Happened not once, but twice. It was very difficult. And his conclusion that God is well-meaning, but he just makes mistakes. So, I mean, philosophically, we know that's not very sanguine because, you know, God is mistake-free. But at the same time, you could see in this, in his writing, how much suffering and led him to try to find some explanation. And that's why we're very fortunate in Krishna consciousness. So if we hear somebody speculating, we should just respond to it with some positive and affectionate Krishna conscious response. Yes, that may be why, or Krishna may have some other reasons. Very hard to understand. You know? When Srila Prabhupada passed away, we had our older devotees were 31 or so, and we didn't really have a lot of experience, and therefore could not really process the grief. And there was a lot of speculating and a lot of uncertainty. So that's part of the process. And, it's good to be a little compassionate. I wanted to share one last story, unless there are any other urgent comments anyone would like to make. Garrison.
I know we spoke on all the positive aspects of the person's good fortune in their life, but I'm wondering as well, how we hear that death is the most intense test. And when I went into the room with Stacey, I could really feel that I knew, I felt like she was there, and that what she was going through was auspicious but really trying, you know, and really intense kind of experience, you know, leaving the body. I'm wondering about that.
It is very fortunate, actually, if somebody leaves their body very abruptly. That's auspicious. And in Stacy's case, she had no consciousness of the pain, and, you know, was just stuck there by the life support artificially for some time. But this was a very story I was going to mention, that my friend Grahila Prabhu, who was living in Mayapur for many years, got this very heavy brain tumor. And he fought it for about 2 years, like with everything they could do, and finally they just gave up, couldn't get rid of it. And I met his widow in Mayapur this last month, and he had passed away there, and she told me that the last 3 days of his life, he became just effulgent and blissful. His body was completely wasted, finished, couldn't do anything. But he had a nonstop smile on his face for 3 days. And he was saying, these are the happiest days of my life. So, we devotees are really good at dying. We're very good at, this is one of our outstanding skills, cooking and dying. So I hope that will give everyone some comfort. And on Sunday, then, we'll have some more memories of Stacy and more discussion. Thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.